So when I hand over, start fucking.
Hello?
Wait. How does that go? At least we got the fuck ups out of the way early.
Oh, fuck. I stepped on the dog's ball.
From the burning mesas of the Arizona desert to the slot machine clad boardwalks of New Jersey, it's the Imaginarium with Scott and Todd. I'm Scott Colbert.
And I'm the horror nerd, Todd Starooch.
I want to take just a brief moment to thank everybody who donated to my GoFundMe to help me with my moving expenses. I met my goal. And I am very appreciative and thankful to everybody who donated. And I just wanted to say that and acknowledge that. But specifically, thank you, Todd, for sharing that, because the majority of people who who donated came after you posted my GoFundMe. So thank you for that.
You are quite welcome, my friend.
And a lot of them were people I know too, but you know most of the people who donated, personally and in the flesh. And I'm just some anonymous twat on the internet. So but thank you. And I really appreciate that.
You are quite welcome, my friend. I'm glad that I was able to help. I'm very glad I was able to rally the troops. And I was thinking today about this, not for that, but for a different reason. I said, we all, you and me included, tend to get very cynical, but every once in a while, your faith in humanity will be restored.
Absolutely.
And there we go. There are decent people out there. And for me as well, thank you to all the people who donated. And, I've been doing this show with you for a long time. So because of that, like a lot of my friends that listen feel that they have gotten to know you as well, just from hearing your voice on the podcast for the last 8-9 years, whatever, however fucking long it's been.
Yeah.
I lost track.
Yeah, those poor bastards.
So I'm just glad that maybe takes a little of the pressure off,
Yeah.
A little of the stress out of your life.
It certainly does. It certainly does. So
awesome.
Again, thank you, everybody, right, for that.
So when you move into the van down by the river,
yeah,
at least you'll be okay.
Which is a good segue into saying that we won't be recording next week because I'll be moving.
Fantastic. So how does London feel about the move? Have you discussed it with her?
I don't know how she's going to feel about that, quite honestly. She's fairly laid back, and she takes things in stride. So I don't think it's going to bother her too much. If anything, she'll be excited about it because it's something new to explore.
Sure.
And you know how cats are about exploring every place.
That's true. I was just about to say, hey, folks, for those of you who don't know, London is Scott's cat. Not some random stranger he kidnapped 2.5 years ago and keeps in his apartment. So just want to clear that right up.
Yeah.
And dude, that's when you posted the picture of her, I pictured in my mind her rolling off that ledge.
And it happened exactly how you pictured
it. Sure,
it
did.
No doubt.
And I'm thinking, I thought cats were supposed to be graceful.
Well, she landed gracefully.
Okay, I'm sure.
It's just that she fell.
Right. That's hilarious. I literally had a mini movie in my head.
Yeah. And I just was lucky enough to have been taking a picture of her when she did that. So, because somebody said that I wasn't posting a lot of pictures of London again, and I have been guilty of not posting pictures of my cat. So I'm trying to get back into that just a little bit. In fact, I've got another picture I took earlier that I'll post later on. But I, you know, I think she'll be fine. I ordered the cat carrier that came the other day, came Monday, actually. And I always worry about cats in, carriers and whatnot, because getting Odetta, my last cat, into a cat carrier was, it was a chore. Because she associated getting into it with going to the vet. And every time she went to the vet, she was getting a shot or something unpleasant happening. So whenever I got the carrier out, she knew that she was not going to have a good time. And she would fight me tooth and nail. And sure. Odetta was a very big cat, if you remember.
Oh, I do. I was like, was the thing a mountain lion or what?
Yeah, she was the whale of cats,
Yeah.
And London is just the opposite. But I got the cat carrier and I opened it up and I put it on the floor and she went right in. She made herself comfortable in it. Mm. So I don't think that'll be a problem getting her in that. Now, keeping her in it for a while until everything gets moved out and moved in is a different story. But, she's just going to have to deal with that.
Yeah, so. I mean, they're pretty resilient.
Yeah, and you know? She is. She really is. So, all right. So, I also need to make a disclaimer that last week we had our annual celebrity death watch.
Yes,
and one of the people that we talked about rather prominently was Jimmy Carter, and as you know, because I sent this to you the other day. Jimmy Carter has now entered hospice at home.
Yep.
We had nothing to do with that.
Yes.
That was not our fault. That just happened to have been a coincidence. We didn't jinx him or anything like that.
Yeah, Lord knows.
I don't think so.
In fact, we always put a disclaimer when we do the Celebrity Death Watch, like, this is not an endorsement of death. It's just, who do we think that will be next? So, yeah.
So I guess it's only a matter of time for Jimmy.
Yeah.
Because I know when my mother went into hospice care, it was only maybe a couple of weeks that she was in it before she passed away.
The same thing with my mom. Yeah, it went pretty quick.
Yeah.
They know. So They know.
And she didn't want to linger,
Yeah.
Her biggest fear was, having a long, protracted, painful death, which is, close to, what she had, with the pancreatic cancer, stomach cancer, and all that shit. But fortunately, she didn't suffer too long. And as I said on this show after she died a couple of years ago, hospice, I can't say enough good things about hospice. They are just such an amazing organization.
I agree.
So, all right.
Well, speaking of celebrity deaths, before we get to the main one you want to talk about, Stella Stevens passed away.
She was the other one I was thinking about.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I saw that.
Man, I had such a crush, even though
she
was a little older when I had a crush on her. But yet another cast member from the Poseidon Adventure.
Are any of them left now? Gene Hackman.
Gene Hackman. Yeah, Gene Hackman's still around. But
yeah.
Yeah, Stella Stevens and the Nutty Professor. I don't blame Jerry Lewis for pining away for her in that movie.
No, if I were Jerry Lewis, I wouldn't have minded that either.
I'm looking at a picture right now from an episode of Alfred Hitchcock Presents she was in. And I'm like, man, I know she idolized Marilyn Monroe, but I never really put it together. She actually resembled Marilyn a little bit.
Yeah.
The hair, especially her hair, like the way it is in this picture.
Yeah, well, you know, that was the 60s and everybody's hair looked like that.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, that was one of the big, I think even Jackie Onassis had her hair like that.
I'm looking at, God, she was in everything. She was in 1,000 TV shows.
Yeah, she was one of those actresses that turned up in everything. You know, now I don't know for a fact that she was in these, but I bet money she probably was, like Fantasy Island or...
Yep, Fantasy Island.
Some of the nighttime soaps like Falcon yep. Crest or whatever.
Santa Barbara.
Santa Barbara. She yeah. was in everything.
Yeah, Police you know, Story, Heart to Heart. Person.
Yep.
Matt Houston, The Love Boat, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, I would have been surprised if she wasn't on The Love Boat. Yeah, she had herself a nice career.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Damn it. Another one gone.
Yeah. And the big one was Richard Belzer.
Yeah, now he was, I mean, look, 78 isn't young, but it ain't old either these days. You know?
No, and I did, for some reason, I didn't think he was that old. I don't know why, but I just never pictured him being that old.
Well, to me, he was one of those guys, though, that just always seemed old.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, even on Law and Order, when he first started out, like, he looked old.
Yeah, you know? No, you're very, very right about that. And I have a story about Richard Belzer. Now, he did a stand-up special. Now, to the best of my recollection, it was a stand-up special. And I think it was his own special. I don't know that he was a part of, you know, like a comedy show or something. But it was on Showtime, and it was in the late 70s. And it was really kind of the dawn of cable TV and things like Showtime and HBO and Cinemax and whatnot. But he was on this comedy special, and it was on relatively early, like 6 or 7 at night, which was unusual because usually this comedy specials were on 8 or 9 o'clock or later because, you know, they usually had questionable material. So I figured, well, you know, I'll watch it. And which I did. And I was in the TV room and we had the door closed because the air conditioning was on. And as you know, there's no central air conditioning in most houses on Long Island. And the only two rooms that were air conditioned was the TV room and my parents' bedroom. So, and we kept the door shut. And he has a line in this special, and he's kind of sing-songing, why is there lipstick on your thigh? Just a sloppy blowjob. And that was when my mother walked in the room.
Oh, boy.
She heard that line, and she said, you turn that off. We're not going to have that piggy shit in this house. And you know, she's yelling at me. You know, I'm not the one who said it. You know?
So I've
always liked Richard Belzer since then. Then, of course, from Homicide, Life on the Street, which I'd actually started watching again last week after I finished The Wire. And which also gave me the idea for that idea for a show, our favorite intros, TV show intros, because Homicide may very well be on my list because that's such an iconic opening, at least the first two seasons or so, you know, the stark black and white of the characters. And Belzer's always kind of creeped me out because when his face comes on screen during that intro, he turns his head, and it's like he's laughing or smiling or something. But the first time I saw that, I thought, Jesus Christ, he could have been the Joker in Batman. He had that look and vibe in that intro. And I've thought about it since then. I thought, you know, he actually really would have been an interesting Joker. He would have taken it, you know, like 5 or 6 levels darker than Heath Ledger. And I don't think it would have been very funny, but he certainly would have been a very interesting Joker.
Yeah. I mean, now that you say it, I think I agree with you.
Right? Wouldn't that be interesting?
Yeah. Now I'm imagining him in the makeup.
Yeah.
So the interesting, so here, I knew, obviously I knew he played Munch on Homicide, and then that same character moved to Law and Order and then was in an episode of The X-Files. But I had no idea that he played the character on 11 different television shows.
Yeah. Including The Wire.
Yes.
And that was really just kind of a bit part. He was drinking at a bar. Kind of just like a cameo. John Waters did a cameo on The Wire, too.
Yes, that bartender. I knew. That I knew.
But yeah, and I thought for sure that he would have been on The Simpsons, because that just seems like something that he would have been on. But unfortunately, he wasn't.
Yeah, that you're right. That does seem like a natural.
I mean, because he was on every other fucking show. You'd think he would have been on The Simpsons. But Melzer was funny. He started out with Firesign Theater.
He was really funny. I mean, he was funny. He was on a bunch of the Comedy Central Friars Club roasts.
Yeah.
You know, I remember, like, I'm just looking over a couple of articles about him. And one, I actually remember this joke now that I read it. At the roast of Chevy Chase, Belzer said, "The only time Chevy Chase has a funny bone in his body is when I fuck him in the ass.
That might be one of my favorite lines.
That is hilarious. And apparently, now I didn't believe it. They actually said this on sports talk radio the other day that I listened to in the morning on the WFAN here. They were talking about it. And one of the hosts said, they were talking about Belzer, and they said his last words were, "Fuck you, motherfucker."
Yep.
And I'm like, come on. And then I said, well, wait a second. That sounds about right. And I looked it up, and sure enough, according to people who were there, those were, in fact, his last words.
Yes. That was reported by his
And it doesn't surprise me. Yeah, Bill Schaft.
Yeah. And I like that. But it makes me wonder, who is he saying that to?
Right?
You know, I mean, yeah, it's cool. And I think it should probably be on his tombstone if he's buried.
Maybe.
And not cremated. Fuck you, motherfucker. I mean, that's just a perfect epitaph for a tombstone.
It is. Who knows, dude? Maybe, like, it says here, I'm just looking at just a random article. It says, died from complications of unspecified circulatory and respiratory conditions. Who knows? Maybe he didn't say it to anyone in particular. Maybe he was on painkillers or something and just fucking said it. I don't know.
Well, he was a heavy smoker. So I have no doubt that, you know, it was smoking related.
Yeah. I mean, circulatory and respiratory conditions. Yeah. Yeah.
Circulatory, I would imagine, would probably be something like what I have with the peripheral artery disease.
Mm.
And something tells me that he probably wouldn't quit smoking even if he was sick. He just strikes me as the kind of a person who would have a cigarette in their mouth as they were laying dying of a heart attack.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I had an
aunt. Puff, yeah. One last puff.
I had an aunt who was one of those.
Yeah.
She had emphysema and had oxygen, would turn off the oxygen so she could fucking smoke.
my uncle, I'll always say this. My aunt's name was Rose, and he would say, the first thing Rose does when she gets up in the morning is to have a cigarette. And the second thing she does is have another cigarette.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Once it gets a hold of you, man, I have had some relatives. I mean, I had one, I'll never forget, Aunt Gertie. She was such a chain smoker. She would light the new cigarette with the butt of the previous one. You know, that's when you know you're a fucking chain smoker.
Yeah. Now, I quit smoking about 6 or 7 years ago. Actually, 7 years ago, because I quit when I moved into this apartment. And it was not easy to do. It was not pleasant, but I got through it. But the worst part about quitting smoking isn't the quitting itself. It's the wanting to have a cigarette all the time afterwards. Because I still crave cigarettes now. I mean, if there was a pack laying right in front of me now, I'd probably light one up. I miss smoking. I absolutely miss it. And if I could smoke still, I would.
Huh. Yeah, man, a lot of people tell me that. I mean, I never smoked, you know, so I don't know. My ex-wife actually went for hypnosis for it, and damn if it didn't work, you know?
Wow.
She was not, like, a particularly heavy smoker, and, like, when we were together, she got herself down to, like, maybe half a pack a day, and then she just didn't want it anymore. And she tried it and walked in an hour later, walked out and never touched another cigarette. And this is going on like 20 years now.
That's nice.
Or so. Yeah.
And here's the funny thing, you know, as much as I miss it when I'm around people who smoke, like my sister still smokes. And I can smell it on her. The smell makes me nauseous.
Hmm.
And I notice the smell of cigarettes, even just a whiff of it from somebody's clothing, I can smell now. And it just kind of revolts me. But I still want to smoke.
Well, listen, your brain craves the chemical, you know? That's what addiction is, man. You know, my brother is a recovering heroin addict. He's been clean now a very long time, but he tells me all the time that it's a constant battle, you know, because his brain still remembers what it was like to get high, you know,
and
he still, you know, he still wants that. So that's why they say you're always in recovery. You know, you never are an ex-drug addict. You're always just in recovery, you know.
Very true. Very true.
So, but anyway, R.I.P. Richard Belzer. I really liked his character on Law and Order. I watched Law and Order since day one.
Yeah.
I still watch it today, you know? And
I know you're a big fan of it.
I am.
But you know what? I can't watch Law and Order anymore without thinking about John, comedian John, what's his face? Who does the bit about Law and Order? God fucking damn it.
Oh, John Mulaney.
John Mulaney, yeah.
Yeah, when he talks about iced tea.
Yep. Because now every time I watch Law and Order now, I think of what he says about it.
Yeah.
And it just ruins the show for me.
Iced tea, dealing with New York's most sensitive cases.
Yeah. And the guys on the loading dock, you know, moving crates, or the bartender
who
remembers somebody.
Yeah. So. You know, it is true. Like when anyone talks about that show, whether it's a comedian or not, they're like, if a couple of detectives walked up to me and wanted to talk to me about a homicide investigation, I would probably shit my pants. But no, these guys continue just unloading their truck like it's nothing. You know?
Right.
And they're like, yeah, I can't be bothered with you right now. Like, did we mention that we're homicide detectives?
And if we actually acted like that to a real life homicide detective, we would get our asses kicked.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. It's like, are we done here? I got to finish delivering these newspapers. You're like, what? But it is so true. And I never really thought about it.
Oh,
I'm going to try that next time I'm approached by men in suits with guns.
Yeah, right.
Scott, I won't be able to record this week. I got shot and I'm in jail. Sorry.
You talked to a homicide detective, did you?
Yep. I told him to get lost, and it didn't work. It didn't work out the way I thought it would.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, my God. So you apparently watched a movie of some sort.
Yes, and I'm going to couch this in a broader topic, because okay. I saw two movies last night. Okay, and they both have a couple of things in common. One was The Whale, which we've talked about with Brendan Fraser, who plays the 600. I was about to say the 600-year-old man, but that's not quite accurate.
That's a different movie.
600-pound man. And the other one was a low-budget horror movie called Swallowed, which isn't what you think. It is.
So oh, that's the one with Mark Patton in it.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, okay.
So, one of the things they have in common is they're both shot in the 4:3 ratio aspect ratio, excuse me. And I can understand that for The Whale to an extent, because I read an interview with Darren Aronofsky, the director of it, after I watched the movie. And he said the reason he shot it that way was because he wanted Brendan Fraser to fill up the entire screen, which he pretty much did. And he wanted him to be in your face. You know, he wanted people to be as uncomfortable and feel as claustrophobic as Brendan Fraser's character did, because his character can't leave his apartment. He's on the second floor of an apartment complex. And when he moved in there, he wasn't 600 pounds. You know, there's a reason why he gained all of that weight. But he's now stuck there, really, because he can't walk on his own. He needs a walker or a wheelchair to get around.
Right.
So the 4:3 ratio aspect annoyed me a little bit, but I got why he did it. Swallowed is filmed in the 4:3 aspect as well. And that has no fucking reason to be filmed in 4:3. In fact, it works against it. And I don't understand why the fuck they would do that. And, you know, look, I know Eggers did it with The Lighthouse, and I get that. And I will forgive him anything, because his movies are so good that he can do whatever the fuck he wants to, as far as I'm concerned. But is this going to be a trend now where movies are going back to a 4:3 aspect ratio? Because if it is, I'm not going to watch movies anymore. I can't stand 4:3. You know, even watching old episodes of Law and Order or The Wire or whatever the fuck one I'm watching now, Homicide: Life on the Streets. You know, they're all 4:3, to fit the TV screen.
Sure.
We don't need to do that anymore, people. Stop it. Fuck's sake. You have all that screen real estate now. Use it. God damn it.
So let's see. It's interesting. I did not know that it was filmed in a 4:3 aspect ratio.
Yeah.
So while I was ignoring you just now, I looked it up, and I'm trying to see. The film is shot in a style that is both intimate and isolating. Can you talk about your visual approach to the material? I liked exploring how close can these two guys get in the worst possible way. The way the close-up looks in the 4-3 aspect ratio, which is more square and a less traditional shooting format, allows you to fill a frame with a face. Yeah. Once things go wrong, I wanted to be more on the characters' faces than shoot wider on what's actually happening. All right. Well, that's his rationale behind it. I haven't watched it yet, so I have no opinion whatsoever.
Well, but you know,
that's his rationale. Okay.
When you do, it'll be interesting to talk about. But I have to say that if Brendan Fraser does win the Oscar for Best Actor, I wouldn't be disappointed, even though I want Colin Farrell to win. Brendan Fraser showed a side of himself in this movie that I didn't think he was capable of. And I said it on the show a few weeks ago, that I didn't think Brendan Fraser was a particularly good actor. At least in the movies that he's been in, he didn't really need to stretch his acting ability. You know, Encino Man or, the Mummy movies, you know, they don't require Marlon Brando levels of acting ability. And he's never been in anything like The Whale, at least that I remember. So, seeing him in this role, it completely changes my view on him. And I wish to God that he had had more roles, more dramatic roles like this, because we have been deprived of years of him doing some very fine work. This was a brilliant performance by him. And you don't even, I mean, you notice the fat, but you don't think it's a fat suit or CGI or anything. You see the character. And you don't even see Brendan Fraser. You just see this character. And it really is an amazing performance. The movie itself, I've got some issues with, and we'll talk about that if and when you ever see it. But it's worth watching simply for his performance. It's amazing.
Cool. I don't know. I definitely want to check it out. I mean, so Brendan Fraser has a bigger filmography, I guess, than I even realized. But the two films of his that I have seen where it's more dramatic were Gods and Monsters.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, with Ian McKellen and School Ties, which came out the same year as Encino Man.
That was,
you know, and that was pretty good. You know, as I recall, I probably haven't seen it since then, you know.
That was one of the Brat Pack movies, School Ties, if I remember.
Sort of. Yeah. I mean,
it had some of them in it.
Yeah. I mean, it had Chris O'Donnell in it and very young Ben Affleck and Anthony Rapp.
Gods and Monsters is a fantastic
movie. It is. So, but you're right. And Blast from the Past is pretty good. Like, even though it's a comedy, you know, it wasn't like a goofy comedy like George of the Jungle. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you're right. Your point is taken. He's not known for dramatic movies, you know? I want to see The Whale.
It's on video on demand on Amazon and Vudu and all those places.
Yeah, I'll check it out. It's probably going to be an early night tonight. I'm still a little out of it from my adventures, my medical adventures earlier today. So,
glad that you aren't trying to transport drugs across the Canadian border.
Fair enough.
which is kind of what happens in Swallowed, and it's about two best friends who are gay, and one of them is going to Los Angeles to become a porn star, and so his friend wants to give him some money so, you know, he'll have something to live on when he gets there. And the way that he decides he's going to do that is to transport drugs across state line, you know, across the Canadian border, to make some money, which makes perfect sense, because if I want to give somebody some money and make some money quick, first thing I think about is transporting illegal drugs, you know? So they end up having to swallow these little packets of drugs. They're forced to do it at gunpoint. And of course, the drugs aren't what they seem, and they have to be get removed and extricated from the body because they're not being shat out like they should be. And there's a fairly, it's not gruesome, it's actually relatively tame, but like the best of Alfred Hitchcock and Psycho, what's suggested is far more disturbing than what they ever could have actually showed. But somebody actually has to go in there and pull them out. So,
oh my God.
Yeah. And Mark Patton is a hoot. He plays a nasty, vicious queen. He's the bad guy. And it's just a fun performance. And the movie actually really isn't that bad. I was surprised. I was not expecting it to be very good. Yeah, I mean, when Mark Patton is the only name recognition in a movie, you know, chances are it's probably not going to be all that great. But I was wrong. It was very enjoyable. And I absolutely would recommend it without reservation. A lot of penis in it. A lot of swinging dick in it. Just so people are prepared for it. And yeah, it annoys me that I have to say that because nobody ever says, there's a lot of boobies in it.
Right?
You see a couple of vaginas, too. Nobody ever says that as a warning.
That's a good but point.
People feel compelled to say, just so you know, there's going to be a wee-wee in it. Yeah. There's such a hypocrisy about nudity in movies.
You are right about that. I will not disagree with you. Yeah, 100% right. I mean, personally, I don't care. Like, as long as the movie's good, like, you know what I mean? And it's like part of the movie. As part of one of the films that was submitted for Grindhouse, I watched the other day. It's got some weenus in it for absolutely no fucking reason. I'm like,
well, that's okay. A recommendation for me.
There was really no reason for that right there. Like the whole sequence where it happens, I'm like, okay. Like, I don't really care that I just saw that dude's dick, but why did I need to see it? I don't understand. You know,
but that's called the Harvey Keitel contract,
I guess,
where you have to show your penis in movies, whether people want to see it or it's necessary to the scene or not.
And then the funny thing is, from a filmmaking standpoint, I was trying to figure out if that was the dude's real dick or not. Or was that a stunt penis?
Yeah, you know.
I'm like,
no, that's a very good point.
You know?
Because there is a scene in The Wire where this guy gets up onto a table in a bar and whips his dick out because he's supposed to have a huge dick, and you see it for like maybe 2 seconds, and it is big, but it looks real, you know. So I don't know if it was the guy's real penis or not. If it is, props to him. Very impressive.
Yeah, I mean, it's the whole Dirk Diggler thing, you know?
Like, yeah.
Wait a second, is Mark Wahlberg's penis really that big? You know?
No, he's just that big of a dick.
I think so. But, you know, and it's like, so imagine like you're the guy in a movie and they're like, so listen, we're going to need some male nudity in this movie. And you're like, yeah, no problem. It's okay. I'm cool with it. No. But not your dick. We're going to need you to use a fake dick. You're like, what? Imagine, now you go like the rest of your life, like looking down like, oh, man, like it wasn't even good enough to be in a movie.
Right.
I would be a little insulted, just saying.
I would be too.
Sorry, sir. We're going to have to use a stunt penis. Like, what? Okay. Damn it. Oh, God. All right.
Enough. All right. So those two movies are highly recommended. Really quick, something else very highly recommended. Kathleen Madigan has a brand new special on Amazon. And it's probably the funniest special that she's done. But I will say this. Whoever shot that special should never work in the industry again. Because for the entire special, where they're not doing far away shots, part of her head is cut off.
That's,
you know, the framing on it is fucked up, and I just don't understand how that could happen. It really detracted from it. I had to stop watching it and just listen to it, because all I could notice was, you know, part of her head is missing, you know, just from, like, the hairline up.
That's weird.
Yeah, it is, and I don't understand how they did not notice that when they were filming it, or even in post-production.
Huh. I'd have to check it out, because I do like her.
Oh, it's really, really funny. You know, and I know people do bits about millennials and kind of ad nauseum, but she has a somewhat fresh take on it. And she's just so appealing. She's the kind of person that you want to sit down and have a few drinks at the bar with, because you know she's going to have some good fucking stories.
For sure. Yeah. There's another comedian who has a new special that just came out, Nate Bargatze. And I only recently discovered him, and I find him to be hilarious, because he is the type of comedian I like, where he kind of just points out the absurdities in, like, everyday life. And he talks about his relationship with his wife and his daughter and everything, and just the everyday shit that happens to him. And it's hilarious. And I only discovered him like a couple years ago. And now I follow him religiously. I find him hilarious. And his delivery, his pace and his delivery, I find really funny.
I will have to check him out.
Yeah, it's Nate Bargatze. It's on Amazon Prime, the new special called Hello World. And I find it really funny. Yeah. Yeah. And I have no problem, like, whether a comedian works clean, works blue, or whatever, but he works clean. He makes it a point of it, because apparently he's a devout Christian. There's nothing, like, he's a devout Christian, but he doesn't, it's not part of his comedy, except, like, once in a while when he pokes fun at himself, you know? So he's not overpowering with it. But my point is, he's one of those comedians that works clean, but is hilarious in spite of it, you know?
He looks a bit like Nick Kroll.
He does. He does.
I will check him out. Very funny.
You should. It's worth it. It's like an hour, you know, like a normal comedy special. But
I don't mind clean comedy.
No, not at all. I don't care either way.
If it makes me laugh, that's all I care about.
Exactly. So
I mean, Kathleen Madigan is basically a clean comic too. You know, outside of her four-letter words she uses every once in a while.
All right. Awkward silence.
So
we have some, we got a little bit of time left. So let's go. You had a kind of a main, well, maybe not a main, but another topic you wanted to talk
about. Yeah, because I just heard about this yesterday. And apparently the estate of Roald Dahl has given permission to the Puffin Publishing Group, who publishes Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and all the other Roald Dahl books. I have a hard time saying his name. making some changes in his books. omitting something, omitting some words that may be considered offensive. And I, needless to say, being a writer, I have some issues with that.
I don't blame you.
You know, and first of all, I blame his estate for allowing it to happen. His estate is for it. You know, they made a statement basically saying, you know, when books are, you know, reprinted, you know, there's always changes made, whether it's the cover or this or that. And I thought, yeah, you always change the cover when it's a new printing, just about, but you don't change the fucking text of the book, you know?
You know, well, yes and no. Like, you know full well that sometimes new editions come out and maybe something gets tweaked or something gets changed. And when I heard about this, I had the same reaction you did. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? And then somebody pointed it out. Well, it's been done with his books before. And I'm like, yeah, by his own hand. Like, in the original version of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the Oompa Loompas were black pygmies. He did his own rewrite where he recast them as, I think it was little fantasy creatures or something generic like that.
Yeah.
Because by his own admission, he was like, yeah, that's a little bit racist. I need to change that, you know? And it's for the better. I'm looking at some of the changes, right? Like in Fantastic Mr. Fox, you know, the sort of one of the villains of the Fantastic Mr. Fox are the big tractors on the farm, right? That, you know, dig up their homes and stuff. Apparently, the tractors are no longer black in the book. They took out the word black. They're not black tractors anymore. So we're not even allowed, like, whatever color, like, you know, they're not black. And the earthworm in James and the Giant Peach no longer has lovely pink skin, but lovely smooth skin. So I guess an earthworm can't have pink skin. I guess pink, you can't refer to pink skin anyway. I don't even fucking get it, dude.
Yeah, I don't get
it. It's an earthworm. It's a fucking earthworm.
Yeah.
You know? And then apparently in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Augustus Gloop is no longer fat anymore.
Enormous.
Yeah. I mean, dude, look. I am not in the habit of shaming anyone or harming anyone, but if we're changing literature now, classic literature, because someone out there can't handle reading the word fat, I think we have a problem. We really are, as a society, becoming fragile to the point where it is completely unhealthy. I'm a chubby guy. I often look in the mirror after taking a shower and I am not pleased, but I don't care if I'm reading a novel or I'm reading a book and I read the word fat, I have no emotional reaction whatsoever.
Yeah. They're not calling you fat. They're calling the character fat. That's how they're describing the character, not you. I mean, common fucking sense people use it. Jesus Christ. You know, are they going to go back into Huckleberry Finn and Tom Sawyer and change the name of Edward Jim?
I think they already have in some editions.
Have they? What did they change it to? And I would piss my pants if I was wearing any, I would, if they said Edward Jim.
Right.
You know?
Right. So again, in The Witches, there is a paragraph, and I'm reading from an article. I just picked it one article at random. This one happens to be on CNN, and it's an opinion piece by someone named Holly Thomas, who is a writer and editor based in London. So I picked this purely at random, and I just happen to agree with some of her points. So in The Witches, in one paragraph describing the witches' dedication to hunting children no matter what they're up to, a sentence has been changed from, even if she is working as a cashier in a supermarket or typing letters for a businessman, to, even if she is working as a top scientist or running a business. Okay. Now, and the person goes on to say why this change is actually damaging, because in the editor's mind, they're saying, well, women don't have to be cashiers or secretaries anymore. But isn't that now changing that? Isn't that somehow saying that there's something wrong with being a cashier or a secretary?
That's exactly what I thought.
You know, like being a cashier is a perfectly respectable job. You know, maybe someone is happy being an administrative assistant.
Yeah.
They are defeating their own purpose. It's so it's ridiculous.
It is. It really is.
It says right here, right? However, many the upgrade, quote unquote, to top scientist might be intended as aspirational, but it also bears a trace of snobbery. And I think I agree with that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Dude, I'm so tired of this. Again, like, I don't want to speak for other people because I'm trying, man, in today's world. I'm trying to be adaptive and be supportive. But if people, again, I just think if someone is so sensitive that they can't handle reading literature, that sounds like a them problem, you know? I mean,
absolutely.
Put the book down and walk away from it. But to say, well, we have to change the book now for everybody is absurd. And how far, where does it go? How far does this go now? We're going to just sanitize everything. We're going to go back and re-record classic songs now because they have a phrase that somebody doesn't like. I don't know. It's scary.
Yeah.
It's scary. Dude, your books, you know how I feel about your books. I love your books. They're right up my alley. But there's some stuff that goes down that's less than savory, let's just say. You know?
Oh, absolutely.
So are we supposed to say, well, no, people should not read Scott Colbert's books because they have scenes of extreme violence, you know, that might upset somebody? I'm going to go on a limb. And I'm going to say that some of your scenes in your books are designed to make people uncomfortable.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? Call me crazy.
Right? That's a big stretch.
Right? And I saw a tweet someone posted about how, you know, To Kill a Mockingbird is being removed from some schools because the book might make people uncomfortable. That's the whole fucking point of the entire book.
Yeah.
I mean, right? Oh, God, I can't. I can't, dude. I can't.
The problem is, it's, and the idea of changing things is even the lesser of the problem. But what it does is, it takes a core issue, which is treating people with respect, you know, and not being mean or not being a dick to people, and amplifies it, and it balloons into something that it never wanted to be in the first place. You know, it happened with political correctness. You know, by and large, when, you know, the term political correctness started making the rounds and people started talking about it. Woke is just this century's political correctness. That's really what it boils down to. They're basically the same thing. And when we had the political correctness, that went way overboard when it was just designed to treat people with respect. And this is the problem that Americans have. And it's an American problem. Europe doesn't necessarily have this problem. You know, it's strictly American because we're just such a bunch of assholes that, you know, half the country has to say, well, if I want to be an asshole to somebody, I should be able to be an asshole to somebody. You know, well, you know, then you should be able to get a kick in the balls, too. You know,
but that's how I feel about it. Like, there are always going to be shitty people in the world. But they should reap what they sow. You know,
yeah.
Like if you're an asshole, you know, this is why I feel like when it comes to certain businesses and stuff, like, let's say there's some businessman out there who owns a shop and it becomes known that he's racist or homophobic. Like, word gets out and next thing you know, nobody is shopping there. And the guy goes out of business and gets what he deserves, you know, to have Supreme Court cases about who shops where and who serves who, I'm not sure is like the most useful thing in the world. You know, there's always going to be shitty people in the world. Let them get what they have coming to them, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Another change, right? In Fantastic Mr. Fox, Badger sat down and put a paw around his small son is now Badger sat down and put a paw around the small Badger. I don't even get the fucking point.
I don't get that either because that, you know, repeating Badger twice in the same short sentence, that's just bad writing.
Right?
Yeah. Say child.
Right. Right. Like, I guess that what they're saying is, well, why does it have to be a son? Well, because he had a son. I mean, I have a daughter. She's an only child. Is that somehow an affront to the sons of the world? I don't, like, when I talk about my daughter, she's my daughter. What am I supposed to say?
Well, exactly.
You know? Oh, no, Todd, you should refer to her as your child because, you know, and like, no. You should eat a dick is what you should do. You know, that's my daughter. And she even refers to herself as my daughter. You know, it became a running joke. Like when she goes to conventions, she's like, I should wear a name tag that says Todd's daughter on it. Because everybody knows me as that from your social media. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's madness. It's just madness.
Oh, it really is.
Anyway, that's our rant for today, boys and girls.
Oh, are we out of time already?
We are. Jesus. Yeah, we are. We're right up against the end of the show, man.
Wow, that went fast.
Yeah. So, just one quick note. It was finally winter today in New Jersey. It was actually 30 degrees when I woke up this morning.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and we're supposed to get a little bit of snow and ice tomorrow.
A little late in the season for that now. It's almost March.
It has been weird. It has been weird. Yeah. I guess there's some big winter storm sweeping across the country. There's like 29 states affected or something like that. But it's supposed to miss us here. We had some freezing rain today, but tomorrow it's going to be in the 50s again. So
go figure.
I'm not really, you know, we might get some snow flurries, but I wanted one good snowstorm, you know, I really did.
That would have been nice.
Yeah. It's just weird. I mean, I work from home, so I get to just look out my window and go, ooh, pretty, you know, I don't have to go anywhere. Yeah. So.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah. So there we are, folks.
All right. So what have you got going on?
Well, we actually have some ongoing news. Haunted, duh, had a seizure there or something. Haunted will be screening in a month in March as part of the Garden State Film Festival. So we're very excited about that. This was going to be our second year in a row being part of the festival. So,
awesome.
And a film that that Tom Ryan directed called Ramsey will also be screening as part of the film festival. So that's pretty cool as well. Robot won an award at the Austin Austin something film festival that has a name, I can't remember it, but Austin Revolution Film Festival won for Robot, won for best editing. So congratulations to Tom for that.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, we're getting a lot of buzz both for Return to the Theater of Terror as a whole and some of the individual stories as well. So yeah, we're just chugging away and we're going to be screening in April at Kevin Smith's Smodcastle Cinemas down in South Jersey. So as soon as awesome. They have a date and time locked in, I will make that announcement. So yeah, lots of good things for Theater of Terror. On my side, again, my real job is just keeping me so busy that I haven't had time really for any Grindhouse related stuff. But when we come back after our 1 week break, I should have an announcement.
Awesome.
Related to Grindhouse. So there we are.
Very cool. And of course, you can buy my books at Amazon and you can get the digital versions wherever digital books are sold. And as always, the audiobook versions are available at audible.com. One quick thing about Richard Belzer that I forgot to mention. He and Henry Winkler are cousins.
No shit.
Yeah, I read that. And then I thought, you know, that makes sense because now I can see the resemblance between them.
I'm going to have to look at that. But
facial structure and everything.
Yeah. Huh. Had no idea.
Yeah. And that Nate Bargatze special that you talked about was filmed in Phoenix at the Celebrity Theater.
Ah, cool.
Yeah, one of my favorite theaters, Theater in the Round. George Carlin taped a special there, too.
Mm.
Cool. All right, so we are going to have on our next show
TikTok, yes. Go for
What's his face? I just forgot his name.
Denver Everett.
Denver. Oh, my God. I'm sorry, Denver. I'm so sorry.
From the Everett Lee Show.
Yes. And formerly of Podcast City Network.
Yeah.
He's going to be on the next time we record. And that's going to be good fun because he's always a fun guest.
Absolutely.
All right. So with that said, until next time, may all of your journeys be filled with pure imagination.